That's a nice one.
Yeah.
Somebody probably does, but
what are you doing?
Planing.
English electronics.
Planing a fingerboard.
How long does it take to plane one?
Oh. Probably in the neighborhood of 25 to 30 minutes. You have to get the angle proper. A fingerboard is not an absolutely flat surface. It's curved and in a compound manner, in a compound radius. So you have to kind of work at it a bit.
Now, what are you using to do that?
It's a jack plane. It's an old Craftsman, as a matter of fact. I found it at a garage sale somewhere for not too much money. That's a scraper. It's probably the oldest woodworking tool known to man.
And you're going in the opposite direction than you were playing.
Right.
So that makes the grain, what is that?
It lays it out. It flattens it down. Actually, it's tearing it up right there. So we just go back the other way a little bit. Rosewood is very forgiving. It's very hard. And see what it does? It smooths out the plane marks.
Mm-hmm.
Scrapers were used in lieu of sandpaper long before there was such a thing as sandpaper.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who's really good with a scraper, and I'm somewhat out of practice and this one is not terribly sharp, can actually take a shaving, the width of the cut, the blade,
mm-hmm.
and that's thin like these plane shavings, even thinner. If you've got your scrapers terribly sharp, you can do that.
How do you sharpen them?
You have to grind them to an absolutely square edge, and then you roll a burr on them with a piece of steel that's harder than they are. And you're actually turning over a little edge on it. It's called burnishing it.
Do you do that yourself?
Yeah. And obviously not often enough.
Do you have different kinds of scrapers?
Oh, yeah, there's all different shapes and sizes and so on of scrapers. There's basic square rectangles. There's a neat one.
It's called sort of a paisley shape.
Yeah, it's called a swan's neck. Called a swan's neck scraper, and that's for scraping insides of curves and insides of small hollow places, necks,
mm-hmm.
you know, the heel of the neck is for scraping in those curves.
That looks like a French curve that yeah. women used to sew with.
Exactly. It's very similar in shape to a French curve that you'd use to draw with or sew with or whatever. Uh-huh. Little half moon shaped things. You wind up making scrapers yourself for different places because you get into your, you know, you've got a
tight place.
Convex, you know, got a big deep hollow or something like that, or you got a binding is where you use a scraper a lot. You know, the plastic that's around the edges of the guitars,
mm-hmm.
you scrape that. It's always thicker than the groove, you know, and then you fare it in, you scrape it flush
mm-hmm.
as you go. So you wind up with little bitty ones, and you wind up with big ones, and so on and so forth. You wind up making scrapers out of razor blades and old files and old hacksaw blades and whatever you can get your hands on. The scraper is probably the least understood tool in woodworking, and probably one of the handiest. I think most woodworkers, if they get used to using one, would really like them. They really would, because they leave a very smooth, clean finish.
Hmm.
You don't have much sanding to do, and if it's perfectly sharp and correct, you don't have any sanding to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect when you're done.
So as a As a luthier, do you consider yourself a woodworker?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Even though as a luthier, you're called on to fix banjos and so on and so forth, and electric guitars and so on, most of them basically start out with some wood in them. And especially if you're going to build or refinish or things like that, then you're a woodworker. Then you're as much a woodworker as a cabinet maker is, or a furniture builder. A lot of the same skills are involved. A lot of the same frustrations are involved too. Humidity, and especially when you're trying to finish stuff. I love planes. Planes are a lot of fun.
Does that work off a lot of frustration?
Some, yeah. I suppose. I never really think about it that way. A lot of times it causes a lot of frustration. You know, just like anything. We jokingly say around here that we're gainfully unemployed because we're doing what we like to do and getting paid for it, making a little bit of money to do it. But it's, you know, there's frustrations with any business. Anytime you have to, you know, have schedules to meet and deadlines and so on and so forth, there's always a bit of frustration involved. So you're not really in this little isolated artistic cocoon, you know, that you'd like to be. You know, you have to be part of the real world too, you know. So that's a big plane, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They make little guys like this that are called finger planes.
So, and they just fit your finger.
Yeah, essentially. This is a pocket plane. Because the old carpenter guys had carry them around in their pockets, and they were that size, and they'd use these to true up a door or, you know, voopa voopa on something that they needed to level or square up or something like that. This is a more modern version of a plane. I call these cheese graters.
That's what it looks like.
That's what they look like. The multi-teeth, they're made by, they're called a Surform tool. And they do the same function, as you can see, but they do it with littler teeth. And what the disadvantage to these on some kinds of woods is, you see how the wood's got hard spots and soft spots between the grain lines of the wood.
Uh-huh.
It's softer between them, and the grain itself, the figure that you see, the lines and squigglies that you see, are harder. Well, these little teeth seem to dig more in between.
Yeah.
And leave the hard spots up, so you get a little rough ridge. Where if you take a plane, okay, now it flattens it out.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It takes the
So what is the cheese grater for?
Quick removal of stuff. It takes a lot off in a hurry.
Uh-huh.
So on soft woods, it's not particularly good for rosewood, which is hard, but on a softer wood like mahogany on a neck or something, to quickly form it,
mm-hmm.
you can use these.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and especially you can use this on a curved surface where you really can't use a plane.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can go around a neck surface with this where you can't
right.
with this.
Uh-huh.
Okay, because it will dig into the chatter across the grain and
uh-huh.
take chunks out as it goes, where this takes... Because it's got so many little cutting surfaces, it takes chunks, but then it cleans it up after it. You know, the next one of the hundreds of little cutters on here will clean it up afterwards.
Uh-huh.
Shavings sound neat, don't they? They're fun to play with, you know. Sometimes when you're building a neck or something, you're standing ankle deep in these things.
And so you make a noise as you walk
around.
Yeah,
right. You crunch around your shop until you can't stand it anymore, and then you get the vacuum cleaner out and... You know, suck them all up. Here's another old world tool that the luthier still uses. It's called a draw knife.
So it looks like one of those big saws that woodsmen used to saw a tree from
right,
both sides.
Right. Yeah, it looks like a double-handed buck saw or whatever those are called. But you can take it. What a draw knife does is you pull it towards yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Remember in Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts said never cut towards yourself? Well, with the draw knife, you got no choice.
Because you draw it towards you.
Right.
Oh, that's
see?
That takes a lot off.
So you can see how you can take one of those neck blanks I showed you, how square and rough they are. You can take that and then produce it into a rounder, more normal surface for a neck. Okay. See how that dug in because I went the opposite direction?
Mm-hmm.
Turn it around.
So you have to, when you're drawing toward, you have to go with the grain?
Right. You go with the grain instead of against it, because against it, it goes underneath mm-hmm. where you really want to be. This was a tool that they used to use to round everything with. They'd rough it out, okay? It's getting rounder. Okay, they'd rough it out, and then they'd come back with a tool like this. This one may take 20 minutes to unbury. This is called a spoke shave. These are some real old tools that one of the fellas that you interviewed earlier, Tommy Powell, dug up out of his garage and gave to me.
Uh-huh.
So I have no idea how old they are, but this is a spoke shave, and this is a device.
And it was used to shave
spokes
on wagon wheels.
On wagon wheels, exactly. And you can see this one needs to be sharpened. You see how it chatters uh-huh. and doesn't cut smoothly? That's because it's not sharp.
And it's like a draw knife, too, because
it's like
draw toward
you. Yeah, it's a miniature draw knife, essentially, is what it amounts to. And they used to make draw knives, teeny tiny's too. That's a draw knife. Huh. And yet it's, what, a quarter the size of the other one? The other one's about 18 inches long, and this one's maybe 6.
Mm-hmm.
Same principle.
But it won't cut as deep, so you don't have as much purchase.
Right, exactly. You can do finer work, see? Mm-hmm. I can do stuff like this with it.
So where, more control.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Kind of fun. This is also a real old thing. They still make ones like this. You can still buy one like this, but...
like the big draw knife.
Like the big one, but you can't... I have never seen a little one like this anymore. I picked this up in a flea market or an antique place somewhere
mm-hmm.
for a couple of bucks. And if you're careful what you buy, old tools will serve you just as well as brand new ones.
Just have to keep the blade up on the...
Right, you have to sharpen them. Like anything else, you know, you have to take care of it and make sure you do what you... Make sure you're doing the right thing by your tools. There's nothing worse than a dull tool. A dull tool, you know, everybody worries about sharp knives in their kitchen and so on and so forth. Well, a dull knife will hurt you a lot faster than a sharp one will. So a sharp one does the job very easily, and a dull one you got to fight. So which is going to cut you? You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly simple to figure out. Okay? Well, that's something that's something that's really kind of interesting and you ought to know about. There's a lot of legends. You know, we talked about Stradivarius.
Mm-hmm.
You and I did, I think, a little bit, and mm-hmm. what his secret was, and they still don't know mm-hmm. why his violins sound so incredible and some others that were made by equally competent people at the same time didn't. Well, there's all these theories and legends, really, that A, it's his varnish, and B, it's they soaked the wood in manure. No, he buried the wood in the dirt for a while before he used it. No, it was shrimp shells in the varnish process. No, it was figs. You know, there's just all these legends and so on and so on and so on. Well, probably the truth be known, Stradivarius was an extremely careful craftsman, and what he did meticulously and took time and listened and so on and so forth. Well, the Martin Guitar Company has all these legends that have grown up around them, and the best of which, I think, is the fact that back in the 30s, early 40s, actually, late 30s and early 40s, it was rumored that they were making the tops. Now, the top is the most important part of the guitar as far as sound production. We've already discussed that. They were taking the old spruce masts off the sailing ships, the old clippers and so on, that they were, at that point, junking out. Mm-hmm. And that Martin was buying these masts and making their tops out of these ship masts.
Because the wood was aged.
Right. And the wood had been, you know, cut 100 years before. It had been at sea. It had been flexed. And it had been soaked in all this salt air and so on and so forth and been around the world and weathered. And it was hard and brittle and dried out and perfect for making tops out of. Well, that's nonsense. It's balderdash. They never did that. But some dealer in New York went so far, I don't know if it was in New York for sure, but a Martin dealer around the country made labels to put in his guitars, genuine ship mast Martin.
Oh, great.
You know? And there's just,
price.
Right, there's just all kinds of legends that go with these things. Back when the wood had to be changed because of the embargo, when Martin had to switch from Brazilian rosewood to Indian rosewood, mm-hmm. The rumor was that their wood had burned up. They'd had a fire in the sawmill and their wood storage, and it had burned up. They also used to say that Martin kept wood around, and all their wood had been aged 50 years before it ever went in a guitar, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that wasn't true either. They used green wood because they had to use a different kind of wood. Well, it had not been aged, so it was green. So there were all these problems, and there are legends about the Lloyd Lore mandolins that were made by Gibson back in the 20s. They're probably the finest mandolins ever made, and he invented a style, and he just was a very heady guy and a forerunner of acoustic engineering, and he took violin-making principles and tenets and applied them to the F-style mandolin, mm-hmm. which Orville had designed because it was pretty. Well, he made incredible mandolins because of it under his supervision. But there were stories about soaking the wood, and this wood had been found and was 300 years old, and old Indians had cut it, and I mean, it was crazy. You know, so there's been all these weird, weird things that have come up.
So how do you sell Peace River guitars? What's your story?
What's my story? I don't know. I just let him see what I do. I let him play it. And I think they speak for themselves. You know, if you play the guitar and they do sound good and they're well made, you know, you can see what they're made out of. You know, you can't hide that. And say, here, play it. And that's the way most intelligent people buy a guitar or any musical instrument is on its sound or its reputation. Uh-huh. And if you don't have a reputation yet, you know, you have to get a, make sure you've got at least, you know, the three things probably are reputation, quality of material and workmanship, and sound production. Well, you got to have at least two out of three. Uh-huh. So, you know, you work hard and find the best stuff you can get, and you put it together as well as you can and make it sound incredibly good, and then soon you'll have the reputation to go with it. But Martin's been in business for 150 years. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's been passed on from father to son to father to son to father to son. Martin's, he's the kid that's in there is Christian Frederick Martin the IV, and he is the sixth generation of that family to head that company. And he's like 36, 37 years old.
Uh-huh.
Just by an accident of birth, you know, I could have been him, right? Or whatever. He could have been me, and then we'd both been crazy.
Right.
Or than we are. So, you know, the legends that go with the building of guitars and musical instruments I've always thought were kind of funny. And there's a lot more. You know, you could probably research it for hours and hours and days and weeks and months and find out a lot more strange stories that went with them. So, okay?
I like